From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noah.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Deccant. Most importantly, you are here. You are you. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know, regardless of where or when you are tuning in. Oh boy. This one is a doozy. It's a very strange topic. It's something that we have received multiple requests about over the years, YouTube comments, 3 a.m. tweets, and so on.
It's a conceptual topic. Mm. It's one of those that we do those every once in a while where you really have to open your mind and go on a journey through several different hoops before you can really get to the concept. And that's what we're going to do today.
Wait, we're going on a journey?
Oh, this is a full-on journey.
I didn't sign up for a journey. I thought we were just going to sit here at the table.
We're already moving just in directions we cannot perceive. That would be the argument here. Most of us have heard strange stories about extraterrestrials, aliens, UFO, Roswell crash, Eric von Daniken's sort of stuff about ancient aliens building civilization. And the idea is usually they came from somewhere beyond the solar system, but you'll also hear stuff like the ancient lunar inhabitants or an old civilization on Mars.
Yeah, right? A physical place that they are traveling from on some type of ship or in some manner like that.
And whether or not you believe in the stories of extraterrestrial contact, there's no denying that it's been a conversation or an angry debate that humanity has been having for a long, long time with varying iterations, which we'll see in folklore today as well. Over the centuries, loads of researchers, scads of academics, what's another name for a group of people? Multitudes of mystics, right?
And a cadre of scholars.
Yes, yes. They've all argued with varying degrees of credibility for or against these possibilities and the claims for the existence of intelligent, non-Earth-based life. These claims typically take several forms. First, there's the basic idea that these things do exist and have contacted humanity or Earth, either in the ancient past, whether that's in the early days of human or pre-human civilization, or even before humans entirely, you know, like the elder things in all the H.P. Lovecraft stories.
In the seeding of humanity.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And the other side of this would be that this contact occurred in the recent past or currently through accident, like the popular legend of the Roswell crash, or through design, where these aliens said, hey, we like what you all have going on for one reason or another. We're just gonna drop on in, get in where we fit in.
Or perhaps even influence us in one way or another as a human civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's how to farm, morons. Right? Here's how to take the thoughts that occur in your head and put them on the physical plane so that people can hear from you when you're dead.
I would just hope that they would see from afar that, you know, we have a tendency to kind of be jerks and kill everything. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be a good idea to stay away.
Or maybe it's something they want to nip in the bud.
Well, that's cool, too. We'll take all the help we can get.
Or maybe it's something that all intelligent life goes through, almost a stage of development.
Sure.
A sort of universal adolescence.
Like, I don't know, the terrible twos?
Right, yeah.
2 millions.
Mm-hmm.
Time is a flat circle, my friends.
Oh, boy. We're falling into and around it. The second idea that about alien life would be, as Matt mentioned earlier, that extraterrestrials have either seeded life on Earth or somehow modified existing animal life as we recognize it today. Personally, my favorite example of this, and I think the most plausible one, is this theory we've talked about, which is a fascinating idea, which just a terrible name.
Panspermia.
Yep, panspermia. It's you can pause and do some puns if you need to, folks, and then we'll come back in. Panspermia is the idea that life here all life here on our planet was seeded not by an intelligent extraterrestrial life, but by microbes that were super hardy and able to tolerate the hazards of space, and they were attached to a comet or other heavenly object that just crashed here.
I could see that as being the genesis for all human life. I mean, I'm picturing, you know, the beginnings of this crazy thing we call humanity as being like little tiny particles and microbes. I could totally see that.
And water bears.
That too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're so cute.
Tardigrades.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, tardigrades.
And indestructible, right? Pretty much. Like they can like, you know, survive for long periods of time with no
oxygen,
food or oxygen.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah. In space, radiation, yeah. Bring it on. Mm. They're good to go.
Yeah, they're the Energizer Bunny of, you know what, I'm going to give up on this one.
The cosmos?
There we go. Thank you, Noel, because just a peek behind the curtain here, I tried to make that reference and I had to stop and off air ask you guys which battery it was.
Are you sure it wasn't Duracell Bunny?
Did Duracell even have a cute little spokes thing?
It's just the copper top.
Really? It's a little dull. I think they would have updated that by now. EverReady had a creature, didn't they?
I want to say
a dinosaur.
I feel like all products should have some animal mascot that's disturbing in its implications. Like there's a grocery store chain here in the southeastern part of the United States called Piggly Wiggly. You may not be familiar with this if you have not spent time in this neck of the global woods, but the Piggly Wiggly mascot is a pig that's really into killing pigs, and in one of its original iterations, it was cutting itself, too.
No.
Yes.
Aww.
And that's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with today's show. That's just how people perceive and portray things.
That's just how it is here in the South.
Another way that it could just be is that somehow,
that was good, man.
For some reason, aliens were the ones who actually planted the seed and altered the DNA of existing life on Earth to create intelligent life somehow, some way.
Okay, so the idea there is maybe life was already present in some form when an extraterrestrial arrived and then they said, hey, let's go back through the genetic code and punch things up a little bit.
Yeah, or there was some type of interbreeding that occurred between species that existed and whatever alien species this was. That one, as difficult to grasp as all of these are and as implausible as some of them might be, mm-hmm. That one to me is just not even a thing.
You don't think so? Because people who are proponents of this would argue that all the stories of ancient travelers from afar, like the Nephilim, for instance, breeding with the human population, they would argue that that is a coded translation of some true events.
Yeah, I think it's just what we know about how difficult it is for any type of crossbreeding just from terrestrial species.
Sure.
It seems as though maybe they had perfected the science of it, uh-huh. But I highly doubt that.
And then one of the big assumptions would be that there would be some kind of commonality or closeness such that you could exchange or modify genes. We know technically that it's possible to make a so-called human Z. There's not hard proof that anyone did it for a variety of understandable reasons.
But again, fairly closely related,
sure,
species.
Yeah. And then there's the third category of theories about or opinions about extraterrestrial contact with Earth.
Right. And that's the idea that intelligent life has to exist somewhere, whether it's at the same time as intelligent life exists here on Earth or somewhere in the past. And if by some strange coincidence, some chance, we are the first intelligent life, other examples are going to pop up somewhere, sometime after we blip out.
Yep, somewhere after our world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper, there will be another civilization or another form of intelligent life that also grows up as a latchkey kid in the universe and wonders, Are we alone?
And why not, man? It makes, like I said, we were talking about earlier with the water bears and the, you know, just the weird primordial goo that beget us. What makes us so special that it only happened for us? I don't know. Like, I'm asking.
It's a great question.
Yeah, is a great question.
But this idea.
You really get to work on answering that one.
Yeah. But while we're in the process of getting ourselves together, we do know that this concept that extraterrestrial life definitely did, does, or will exist is based on pretty solid understanding of the universe, which, although it is negligible, is terrifying and nihilistic mm-hmm. in its persuasiveness.
Well, yeah, because you're looking at just the sheer size of the universe itself, how many billions of galaxies there are, and all of the stars in those galaxies mm-hmm. and all the planets that go around those stars. And then you also imagine how long it took for intelligent life to arise on the Earth. If you're thinking, okay, the Earth is over 4.5 billion years old, it took X amount of time for humans to arrive in some form or another, at least Neanderthals and a little before that, the documented forms of intelligence that we have. It takes a long time for life to spring on a planet and then to become intelligent.
And also we have no point, at least our understanding, we have no point at which time solidly stops.
Yes.
We have some ideas about when things might get kind of screwy and we might find a Shyamalan-esque twist in time. But for now, we understand that the universe is huge. There's a vast span of time available for intelligent life to arise. We're in something pretty similar to an infinite monkey's infinite typewriter situation, which leads us, of course, to the Fermi paradox, the terrifying question, well, if it is almost statistically certain that some other intelligent life form exists, why haven't we heard anything, you know?
Yeah, and then that's when you get into the distances problem. And then you get into the physics problems about being able to travel such distances to actually meet the other intelligent species.
Yeah, the same rough math assuring us that extraterrestrial sentient life has, does, or will exist also almost certainly guarantees we will never, ever, ever, ever meet them. Like two candles burning on opposite shores of the Pacific Rim, we will never detect the light of another civilization, full stop.
Wow, that's a downer.
But never fear. Today's episode proposes an alternative, and it's one you might not have heard before, folks.
I know, I'd never heard it before.
Well, you will hear it after this quick break.
Here are the facts. We have to look maybe not in space, but in other dimensions. And what's a dimension? At basis, what we mean when we say dimensions are we're describing the different facets of what we perceive to be reality. And all of us are familiar with at least three of the main ones, right? The main ones to us. And then, of course, you know, we'll add a fourth one on the way. But let's walk through it before it gets super, just super f***ing weird.
Okay.
We'll start at one. Let's call the first dimension length. Picture a line. It's just an x-axis, and that's it.
Got it.
The second dimension is the other axis, the y. Let's call it width. And our one-dimensional line in a 2D perspective, it suddenly has a discernible, like a wideness to it if you've got those two lines. You can make a box.
Yeah, like a height, right?
Yeah. And now, at this point, we can imagine a two-dimensional object like a square, a rectangle, a circle. The third dimension is null.
Yes, I am that third dimension, the notorious z-axis, the wild card, which we will call depth for our purposes here. Now, our line is raised from the ground or it's descending into the ground. It can curve both toward and away from our perception. Now, we can imagine objects like spheres or cubes.
Huh? Exactly. So we've got three dimensions now. This is how we interact with the world. We look at a table. Oh, look at that. It's got length, width, and depth. I'm doing it right. I've got three dimensions. We're okay.
We're getting up to steam, but why stop there, right? Let's go to the fourth dimension, time. This governs the property of all known matter at any given point. And so now we can imagine how long this cube or sphere has existed in a certain spot, and we can understand the difference between when it was in one position and when it moves to another place. And we need all four of these dimensions, Captain Planeting up together, for us to plot the position of an object in space.
Yes, a physical three-dimensional object that exists at a time.
Yeah, makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. I got that. I'm so with you.
I'm on board.
But it doesn't stop there.
I'm not ready.
I don't know if anyone is, man.
We were promised a journey.
Well, it's a journey that goes deep, deep into the deepest, darkest places that exist.
Describe them to me, Matt.
Well, okay, let's start here. You've got the three-dimensional object, right? In this case, let's say the three-dimensional object is actually a place, like a kind of a place and thing, a pond.
Like the shipping container that we're inside of right now?
The shipping container. But let's imagine we're at a small pond.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Now, and we're just going to zoom deep into this pond, right? So first, as you're going in, you see the pond itself, you see the water, you see the bottom of where the pond is, where the water is sitting on top of it, and we just go deep in there. And then you're going to see, if you get deep enough, you're going to see that inside that water that looks clear to you is actually full of these microorganisms.
Mm-hmm.
And then you keep going into the microorganism, then you see it's made up of all these proteins, complex proteins. And then you keep going down into one of those proteins, and you see that it's actually made out of atoms. Mm-hmm. And then you see those atoms are made out of elementary particles like quarks and leptons and bosons. And this area that we get into is what this entire subject is about. Ooh. Once you get that deep down into what an object in existence is.
If you want a simulation of what Matt just described, there's a pretty amazing game called Everything.
Yes.
Have you played this?
Mm-hmm.
It's literally, you can do what you just described. You can zoom from one layer to another, like meta as hell. Just mm-hmm. like, you know, you can be in a pond. You can go from to the micro level to the macro level, and you can birth new universes and join them together and make them dance with each other. It's pretty fantastic.
But do you end up really understanding it after you play it?
I feel like you get a sense of scale.
Yeah, big time sense of scale. It's very zen. It's a very like nothing really happens, or yet everything kind of happens. I don't know. It's a cool game, though.
It's meditative, I would say. That's what I really dig about it. And man, now I have to go play it again. That's such an excellent recommendation. So, right, according to particle physicists, the world as we understand it is defined in terms of these elementary particles Matt just described. You'll also hear them called fundamental particles. These, according to that idea, are the smallest things in the universe, or at the very least, they're the smallest things we can actually see because we're using some form of energy to communicate their presence and their properties to us, right? And this is our technology only allows us to go to this hard limit. But what if it doesn't stop there? This is where we want to introduce you to one of the world's most widely misunderstood theories, the thing that has put checks in the mailbox of sci-fi screenwriters across the planet, and that is the superstring theory. You'll hear this mentioned in many stories describing a parallel universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a show like Fringe would have something like that, right?
Friends?
Yeah, Friends. Mm-hmm. Just think about it. Think about it. Really think about it.
I know. Yeah.
What's going on with Ross?
No one knows.
Dinosaur expert? Are you kidding me?
Not likely.
I think there was one episode where they just described him instead of like a paleontologist, they said dinosaur expert.
Nice.
I've only seen two episodes of Friends.
Someone should do a parody of Friends where it's like a mashup of Friends and Fringe, and there's like alternate realities of Friends where they're all kind of like, you know.
That'd
different.
Be great.
Just different.
One of Jay-Z's new songs, isn't it based, the video that was made for it is based on an all African-American cast of Friends and like what that would imply and then what the main actor is going through from a societal level, from a personal level. Like, what does it mean that I'm doing this?
That sounds heavy.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's incredible.
Because no one on Friends really suffers.
Yes, and Paul, our producer, has just informed me that the song is called Moonlight.
Paul, the ghost in the machine, Deccant.
Mm-hmm. And who knows, as we'll see in this argument, it might be quite possible that the situation portrayed in the song Moonlight exists, just not in a way that we can currently see it.
Ooh.
So what if, string theorists propose, what if, like the folks in Inception, we need to go deeper and smaller than current technology allows? Originally, the idea was this, that each of these fundamental particles we see, leptons, bosons, so on, actually contains a tiny one-dimensional loop of vibrating string or just an open string. It's something that's just wiggling, mm-hmm. and the vibration determines the charge and mass of this greater particle. As the theory evolved, scientists introduced the idea of something called brains, B-R-A-N-E-S, short for membranes, higher dimensional objects that we'll talk about in a second. And here's the point, or the crux of string theory for our purposes today. The proponents of string theory believe that there are more than four dimensions, and additional dimensions are curled up in these tiny complicated shapes that can only be seen at an infinitesimal scale. And if we could possibly shrink to this tiny Planck-sized scale, the smallest scale current technology allows for measuring stuff, we could see that at every 3D point in space – or 4D, you could say, we could explore another six dimensions. And that's right. Depending on the variety or model of string theory we're talking here, there can be way more than three or four dimensions. We're talking anywhere from 10 in super string theory.
Yeah. And if you want to take a look to kind of get your mind wrapped around this a little better, if there's – was it Wolfram Alpha? I guess it's become something else now. Members.wolfram.com, mm-hmm. you can find, let's see, it's a Jeff Bryant visualization of a Kalabi Yao shape.
Mm-hmm. What this would look like to us.
Yeah, exactly. You can just search for Kalabi-Yau shape, and you should be able to find it. It's fascinating, and my mind is kind of wrapping around it, but not quite.
So, Matt, how would you describe that shape that you're looking at?
Well, it has these shapes rotating so that you can get a sense of what you're looking at, but it's almost like interconnecting, like an interconnected frilly object. That looks as though it's a bunch of different circles that are then kind of placed at strange angles together and then moving together but at different axes.
So it's dynamic.
It's completely dynamic and it is strange. And again, it doesn't quite compute because I'm so not used to imagining anything outside of those four dimensions that we've described.
And possibly we're incapable at this point, right? There are other theories like M-theory attempts to unite a couple of different models, and it posits that there are 11 dimensions. And there's bosonic string theory that says, you know what? Let's double down. Let's get real over the top and supersize it and say that there are 26 total dimensions.
And one of the reasons that there are so many dimensions in a lot of these theories is that the models don't match up with current models. And in order to try and get them to match up better with the current status quo of science, they're like, oh, well, it would work if there were this many dimensions.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And that's a concise explanation. So modeling space-time with extra dimensions makes it more mathematically conceivable and makes it consistent. But you know what? We don't have to stop there. Let's look into it a little further. What do the dimensions begin to look like past number four, past time? What other measuring sticks or what do we encounter?
Well, according to superstring theory, the fifth and sixth dimensions are where we begin to see those alternate possible worlds we always hear about in science fiction, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is the fringe stuff.
Right, right. So what would this look like?
Well, in the fifth dimension, we'd see a world only slightly different from our own that would give us kind of a way of measuring the similarity and differences objectively because they'd be subtle, right?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. We'd have sort of a yardstick by which to compare other things.
And it probably wouldn't immediately break your brain too.
Right. Yeah. We wouldn't immediately have your hair go gray and one of your eyes explode.
It'd be kind of a Marty McFly, you know, situation rather than, yes, like a dude at the end of Pet Sematary situation.
Right. I like that. I find that comforting. That's a place that I would want to visit, provided the it was still similar enough for us to live.
Yeah, in terms of like breathable air and, you know, we all get nourishment from the same basic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then you get to the sixth dimension.
Is that where it gets crazy?
I feel like it is. This is where it's almost the God perspective, where you can see all of the possible different planes almost laid out in front of you of how this Earth, this area that we're in, whatever positionally we are in the universe, all of the different options after the Big Bang, conceivably.
So the same starting point.
Yeah. You start at the same point. This is where you are now since that starting point in all the different iterations. And there are an infinite number of them. So if you imagine looking at your iPhone and being able to see them and just scrolling or just scrolling forever, basically at all the different things, the possibilities.
And what's fascinating about that is if that is somehow true, then this means it would theoretically be possible to travel back in time or go to different futures, right? Go to more than one future possibility. And then in the seventh dimension, you have access to the possible worlds that start with different initial conditions. So a universe that doesn't start with something exactly like the Big Bang, right? Which is mind-boggling. What would that be like? In the fifth and sixth dimensions, again, as Noel and Matt pointed out, the starting point was the same, and later down the line, down the dimension of time, things occurred in different sequences. But here, everything since the very, 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 very beginning has been different and just probably continues to become more different.
I'm trying to imagine it again if I'm looking at my iPhone. So if we're in the sixth dimension and we're just scrolling through everything that maybe is in this folder or something, I feel like the seventh dimension is pulling out a folder or to see the next subroot folders where each one of those you could look into and see the sixth dimension. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad. That's not a bad comparison. So what happens in the eighth dimension? If you'll notice, listeners, the ante keeps upping with each new dimension.
Well, in the eighth dimension, we again get that God mode view of possible universe histories, each of which begins with different initial conditions and branches out into infinity.
Yeah.
So our minds are shattered at this point. They're just floating around in the ether.
So these are increasing. The possibilities are increasing by an enormous step with each movement up or down the dimensional plane.
Yep.
I mean, that's enough for me, but here's dimension number nine for everyone who just wants to keep going. In the ninth dimension, again, if this was true, we could theoretically compare all possible universe histories, starting with all the different possible laws of physics. So a reality that just does not work like ours, right? Which is a real tall order, especially when we consider that we don't fully understand the physics of our own universe.
Yeah, and, you know, not to get into our meat bodies observing this somehow.
You're right. That's going to be one heck of an iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably have to get it on iPad.
At the very least, yeah. Or the iThink, which was, longtime listeners will recognize, an Illumination Global Unlimited product.
Mm-hmm. What ever happened to them?
They're still around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Machinations. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. We haven't heard the last of them. That's all we can say.
Mm-hmm.
In the 10th and final dimension, now we're at the point where everything that is possible, everything that is imaginable is we've taken care of. It's covered. And now, according to physicists, beyond that point, or according to physicists who ascribe to this number of dimensions, beyond that point, nothing can really be imagined by us. And it becomes a natural limitation to our ability to imagine things. But as we established earlier, some models of this sort of theory argue that even more dimensions exist. So if that is true, if we are only conceiving or perceiving four of 26 dimensions, why can't we see the other 22?
Well, one theoretical explanation is called compactification. It's the idea that the other dimensions are in some way folded down into this complex structure that somehow prevents us from seeing them. Kind of like looking at a piece of paper directly from the side. Does this make sense? It's so thin, it is very difficult to discern a piece of paper directly from the side. You would see that thin line, even though the paper has all kinds of unperceived surface area that you just can't make out because of your position in space-time.
In that case, it makes it sound almost like an optical illusion.
Oh, in some ways, or maybe just an inability to observe.
We just lack the hardware, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then there's the other idea, the brain that we mentioned earlier, short for membrane. This would be a higher order dimensional object that can have any number of dimensions. Take your pick. This, in string theory, is considered a fundamental object, the same way that a lepton would be considered a fundamental object in particle physics. And some physicists explain our inability to perceive these dimensions by saying that maybe the problem isn't just us. Maybe what's happened is that our universe is itself a three-dimensional brain, and we are stuck within a larger dimensional space. And this is an idea you had brought up before, Matt, the, I guess, simulation hologrammatic universe.
Yeah, that the if this was some sort of simulation, everything that we perceive, everything that we've ever touched or observed is actually just a computer of some sort working in whatever this – if it is strings even. These strings are just the bits or the particles or the pixels. Maybe that would make a lot of sense if that were true.
Maybe. At this point, there's no solid proof of this theory. The debate rages on. But here's the thing. A lot of the math actually works out. By adding these extra dimensions to calculations, scientists are able to get closer to a functional quantitative understanding or theoretical understanding. Scientists have yet to nail down the famous, or should I say fabled, unified theory of everything.
Mm-hmm. Our compatriot Josh Clark from Stuff You Should Know is working on a project that has him talking to a lot of particle physicists. And his takeaway has largely been, it's kind of a throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks kind of situation, like with economists even. But yet the stakes are so high. It's really interesting.
Well, yeah, because at some point it has to become theoretical, because by observing anything with whatever waves or lasers, mm-hmm. whatever type of wave we shoot at something to observe it at that tiny level, we are affecting it mm-hmm. because it's being pummeled by a wave. Mm-hmm. And you're no longer just looking at something. You are physically touching it with something. Mm-hmm. And how can you know what's down there if you can't make a wave small enough to touch it? So you have to come up with ideas. You literally are theorizing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're right. It's throwing stuff against the wall, but it's definitely the best minds out there.
Oh, like, no doubt. that was an oversimplification. I guess it just means, to Ben's point, no one's really figured it out unequivocally. Yes. And to your point, it's doubtful that they ever will. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't see how you can figure it out at this point.
And it's one of the things that I've heard before that I always found interesting was the idea that at a certain point, when you get close enough to the bleeding edge of thought on questions like this, it comes very close to an article of faith. The smartest people amongst us are using all of the knowledge accessible over thousands of years of civilization and going, gosh, I don't know, guys. Maybe? Just add another dimension. I don't know. It's 4:30. It's Friday. I'm not at all denigrating the work these people do.
Well, it's like you say, it's theoretical, but it's theoretical based on evidence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just a pure leap of faith, but it's interesting how, you know, we see science as the opposite of religion in many senses, and yet that kind of big thinking does play into the stuff that we're talking about. When I say big, I just mean God, the universe, you know, what does it all mean kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. The idea that there could be something larger that we could – or smaller or just different that we could understand despite our cognitive and physical limitations, dimensional limitations. I don't know. Well, here's the point. What if it's true? What if there are, in fact, dimensions of this nature? If that is true, fringe researchers argue, then our first encounters with non-Earthbound sentient life may not be from beyond the stars, but beyond the dimensions comprising our perception of reality.
Who?
Yeah. Because imagine if you can observe some of those higher level dimensions. Imagine if you can observe them and see through your iPhone or whatever device it is, you can see them all and perhaps even be in a different place than where you currently are.
I can't. That's like imagining being dead.
Yeah.
Like my brain does not compute that. You know, you ever tried that experiment where you're like, what would it be like to not exist?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it.
Well, we found some people who believe they know the truth about this, and we're going to discuss them right after a quick break.
Here's where it gets crazy.
What if instead of looking to outer space for intelligent life, we focused on exploring these other dimensions, ultra-terrestrials instead of extraterrestrials?
Yeah, say it again, ultra-terrestrials.
Ultra-terrestrials. It's true. It's an idea that was proposed by a writer named John Keel in the 1970s. He was one of the most widely read and influential ufologists of his time, and he coined the term ultra-terrestrial. Originally, he thought that what he saw as evidence of UFOs was a symptom of extraterrestrial visitation. Physical aliens are somehow traveling to Earth for some reason.
Yeah, that's a ship that I'm observing that it has physical three-dimensional space. Mm-hmm.
And in time, he became increasingly distant from that view. He wrote a book called UFOs, Operation Trojan Horse in 1970, and he pointed out something that is fascinating, I would argue, true. And he said that these descriptions of encounters with what people perceive to be aliens or extraterrestrials, they often parallel certain stories or legends in folklore or religious encounters for very spiritual beliefs. And that's true. You can see the correlation. You know, stories of alien abduction have similarities to old legends of being abducted by the fae or, you know, fairies or some other supernatural creature. But here's where he went with it. He went somewhere different. He didn't say, oh, what a fascinating folkloric parallel. Mm-hmm. He said, also, this perceived link meant something.
Yeah, that this link somehow indicated something more than a mere physical encounter between us humans and whatever these unknown entities were. He used this term, ultra-terrestrials, to describe UFO occupants, the people actually inside the ships or the ones that were there that we were observing, whatever physical form they took. He believed them to be non-human entities that were capable of taking on whatever shape, whatever form, whatever thing that they wanted to become.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds – I'm just going to say it sounds pretty dang crazy.
Have you guys seen Annihilation yet?
No.
Yeah, I read the story.
I think the movie varies pretty wildly from the book, but there's a theme in that film. For at risk of any spoilers, I think you should – if you're interested in this stuff, you should watch that movie.
All right. Let's say it. Let's do it right here. This is a spoiler alert. Skip forward a few minutes if you want to not hear about this movie. Tell me about it, Noel.
Well, just really briefly, I mean, it's about a consciousness that sort of like travels to Earth on a meteor, and it's like this bacteria kind of thing, like we were talking about earlier. But it creates this zone where DNA is transmittable like light waves. And if you're in this zone, your DNA is affected. You're constantly mutating, and everything is mutating because it's like scrambling DNA. It's a little hard to explain, but there is – it's basically it wants to assimilate us and also kind of become us, and there's a whole theme where it – creates clones of people, but not in like a body snatcher's way, in a very existential kind of like, I don't know. It's a mind fart.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paul really enjoyed it too. Right. Yeah. It's cool.
Okay. Well, now I don't have to see the movie.
No.
Saved me some money. Mm-hmm. Thanks, dude.
All right. Spoilers complete. See the movie. Don't listen to Matt.
If there were indeed creatures from another dimension. We're getting pretty deep with our assumptions here, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But if there were indeed creatures from some other plane, how would the average human being or how would technology perceive these entities? What does a creature from the sixth dimension look like to those of us stuck in the 3 to 4 dimensions that we're so familiar with? This gets into, again, I think we referenced it earlier, but this gets into Lovecraft stuff so quickly. It's imperceivable to us. It's that utterly alien.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. So the idea is that they don't come from within our solar system like Mars. They don't come from outside of our solar system like a different galaxy or just another one in the Milky Way. They are actually are in the far future inhabitants of Earth somehow.
So it's like the Upside Down in Stranger Things.
Yeah, that's a great comparison.
Right.
It would be an alternate world, mm-hmm, an alternate universe, yeah.
Just to throw this in really fast, another fantastic film that I couldn't remember the name of called Midnight Special, thanks, Paul. And it's directed by Jeff Nichols, and it, spoiler alert, deals with this very thing. Mm. Beings that have always existed on Earth and still exist on Earth, but they just exist in a different dimension, and it can only be observed by someone who is from that dimension. Anyway, watch the movie. It's really
great.
Let's
also not forget about They Live, you know, or when you put on the special glasses,
yeah,
you see the monsters from the other dimension.
We should just mention that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is definitely a thing that people have been exploring for a long time, well after the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another argument from Keel. As he continues, he believes that these creatures are somehow indigenous to Earth or have been here for some time but inhabit a dimension beyond time and physical matter, and that by shifting up and down through dimensional planes, he ascribes it to electromagnetic activity, but in some unexplained way they can materialize, dematerialize as they please, and he believes that they do have some sense of what we would understand as morality. They could be good or evil. But they seem to, according to Keel, they seem to be really into manipulating and tricking humanity. And he argues that throughout different cultures and times and history, we've called them things like gods or demons or spirits, fairies, monsters. And encounters with these beings, he says, have spawned entire religions. So for completely different reasons or with completely different conclusions, he agrees with folklorists who see modern stories of UFO encounters as the current instance of this long-running phenomenon. But there's, you know, the huge question, the 10-dimensional dollar question here is if this were true, then what the heck is the motivation? Why would these things be here? What would they want to do?
Yeah, it seems like it would take a tremendous amount of energy and currency, probably. Well, it just depends, I guess, on how the technology and or maybe it's not even technology. Maybe it's just some level of consciousness. You have to then theorize about how they're actually shifting dimensions, right?
Right.
Because if it costs a lot of money, you would compare it to like NASA sending a shuttle up, or, you know, SpaceX sending a rocket up, like how expensive that is to do something big like that. And then if you're going to spend the energy to shift dimensions for some reason, perhaps it costs that much money, unless it's some kind of innate ability that each one of these creatures has.
Yeah, like if it's an innate ability, would it be as simple as someone observing in three dimensions, just moving their hand toward or away from their eyes?
Well, yeah, and if it's that, then the motivation could just be more like, it's something that I wanted to do, or I thought this would be funny.
So there's a quote from Keel wherein he describes the motivation as part of a subtle cosmological system of control that's been in effect since the dawn of humanity. That's a very vague statement as far as motivations go.
It's also very intriguing.
Yeah. It does kind of make you want to buy a book.
Oh.
And that's not a burn on John Keel. That's probably just good marketing.
Right, but it also, you know, you would wonder what, again, that doesn't really answer the question of what is the end game, especially if this is, as Matt said, an expensive or dangerous endeavor. Keel also believes this theory explains why some geographical areas are home to more UFO reports. He calls them window areas, and he says they are probably areas with magnetic anomalies, and that this again, makes the process of appearing in our space-time plane or level or our brain, B-R-A-N-E, easier for these entities.
Really fast, before we kind of start wrapping some of this up, let's just talk about a gentleman named Charles Fort and Fortians. So Mr. Keel, John Keel, was a self-described Fortian. He went on Letterman one time, well back in the day, and he was described as a Fortian when he was introduced. And this is someone who follows or believes, or it maybe is just a big fan of, but in some way influenced by Charles Hoy Fort, who was a writer. He published a bunch of books. He was a writer from, oh, well, gosh, he was born in 1874 and he died in 1932. So he existed quite a time ago. But then if you imagine someone like John Keel, who's writing in the 70s and 80s, in the 60s as well, he's writing books about these things that were considered to be, or at least called, Fortian events. Mm-hmm. Things like frogs spontaneously falling from the sky all of a sudden, or it's raining red, or the rivers are running red for some reason in this other country. Or he brings up things about that time it rained raw meat in China in the 19th century that I've never actually heard about. I thought maybe you guys had heard about it from Ridiculous History.
I think I heard a story on NPR about that actually a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
We should totally steal that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Even things that we've
There's
been...
one in Kentucky. That's what I heard about, the Kentucky meat shower.
Oh.
Took place on March 3rd of 1876, where it spontaneously rained raw meat in the settlement of Rankin in Bath County, Kentucky.
Was not there
an isolated event, apparently.
Was there a plausible explanation for that one?
Well, some of the meat was identified as being lung tissue from either a horse or a human baby.
I knew it.
Whoa. Okay, well, we need to look into that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But along with all of these things, these Fortian events, they include things such as Bigfoot sightings.
Sure.
And kangaroos that spontaneously appear in Illinois and then are chased and then can't be found again. Dinosaurs in Italy that get chased and hunted down by the army, but they don't ever get found. But there were dinosaur footprints, according to Keel. And it's just one of those things where I think we have to imagine all of this in that world. The concept of ultra-terrestrials comes from this place where a lot of these Fortian events are perhaps thought to be completely true.
Right. That's a very important extra dimension to add to the episode. And it's true. At this point, there is no solid proof that we could find of these extra dimensions. A couple folks thought they came close in experimental settings. And the math that they have worked on is compelling with the addition to these things. But again, no one's found the famous... again, fabled unified theory of everything. There's also, because there's no proof of these extra dimensions in this sort of way, there's no solid proof of any extra dimensional sentient intelligent entity that would be able to find us. Of course, were it true, then automatically there would be some kind of sentient life in that, in one of those dimensions, as because we're, you know, edging toward infinity. Mm-hmm. But it is completely possible that unobservable sentient life could exist. Emphasis on possible.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can't see the entirety of the light spectrum, nor can we hear the entirety of the sound spectrum. So, possible.
Yeah.
Not plausible.
Not at all.
I mean, there's just no reason to – there's no compelling reason for us to say, oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you guys think that there will ever be a real Walter Bishop that for some reason unlocks the ability to travel that sixth, fifth, and sixth dimension?
I just think it would immediately like vaporize you either physically or just, you know, like I said at the top of the show, break your brain. You wouldn't be able to come back from it. Although that was sort of part of his character too. He tweaked mm-hmm. him out a little bit. Yeah. Talking about from Fringe, right?
Yeah.
Walter Bishop, yeah.
Man.
Good character. I really like that actor.
John Noble?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was great. Also, wasn't he in the Lord of the Rings? He was the worm tongue, not worm tongue, the really horrible king.
Yeah, who goes crazy.
Eats the chicken. Mm-hmm. Well,
sucks that cherry tomato.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm.
Those boys get slaughtered.
Yep.
Is that a spoiler?
No, it's past the statute.
Okay, cool. We're past the statute.
And speaking of time as we understand it, it feels like it's right about time for us to wrap up the episode today. If you have any compelling proof of extra-dimensional entities, which would be very, very surprising to us and to the world at large, love to see it, hear it, encounter it. We may not be ready to go there with you, but, you know, we want to hear what you think. Always.
Did you see Annihilation? What was your read? I would love to discuss that, honestly.
Oh,
I think we could do a whole episode or like a mini. Maybe we should like start doing mini episodes where we like review weird movies or just talk about like a movie that pertains to one of our topics or something like that.
Oh, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
That might be fun.
Especially if we start a thread on here's where it gets crazy and then get people's ideas.
Yeah.
I like that.
Which is our community page you can join to find all of us. Dropping by, you'll also be able to speak with your fellow audience members about anything under the sun or beyond it or in the darkness between the stars that you find particularly fascinating. And again, spoiler alert, we do look there for inspiration for future episodes. So mm-hmm. pop on over and let us know.
You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook where we're Conspiracy Stuff, on Instagram we're Conspiracy Stuff Show. And if you don't want to do any of that stuff, you can just check out our website, which is stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com. It has every podcast we've ever produced. We've got videos on there, all kinds of fun things. Check it out. And even some pictures of us. We still need to get some of
Noel. We have to get some Noel picks up.
It's not going to happen.
Yes, it
is.
Nobody goes to the website.
Are you stopping
us? No one cares.
Everybody goes to
just
the website.
You can just describe me. We'll draw you a picture.
All right.
Well, I think we're due for some new group photos.
Yes, we shall do so. If you don't want to do any of that stuff even, you can just send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.